This is Fresh Air. I'm Dean Olsher, and this is a clip from what many critics think is the best new TV show of the year.
Casey?
Yeah?
I made a decision.
What is it?
It's time.
It is?
It's time.
Natalie?
It's absolutely time.
We've been having some very bizarre computer problems. Have you noticed that? The LCY's been getting numbers wrong.
What do you need?
Messersmith won the gold medal in the pole vault with a leap of 238 feet 6 inches.
That doesn't sound right.
Yeah, it lacks a ring of truth, yes.
238 feet 6 inches in the pole vault. That'd be a record, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
Elliot!
Why are you staring at me?
Because it's time.
It's not time.
It is time.
It's past time.
It's not past time.
It's well past time. You need to start meeting women.
I've met many women.
No, you haven't. You haven't met many women. That's why I'm here.
Oh, boy, I like the sound of this.
You got married at 23 to a woman you met when you were 19.
I know. I'm there.
So you agree?
What?
You agree it's time.
You said it was past time.
Well, it is past time.
I'm screwed.
But I'm going to help you out.
Oh, thank God for that, Danny. Thank God for you.
Thank God indeed.
Indeed I do.
Do you know why I can help you out?
Why?
Because there's still time.
60 seconds to BTR, 2 minutes live.
Loading effects.
Every Tuesday night at 9:30, ABC airs a TV show called Sports Night about a fictional TV show called Sports Night. The show within the show is an ESPN-style sports news program, and the real-life show is a half hour that blends elements of sitcoms and TV drama. Aaron Sorkin, who wrote the screenplays for the films A Few Good Men, The American President, and Malice, is the creator of Sports Night. Thanks for being on Fresh Air.
Thanks for having me.
Sports Night really stands out for a couple of reasons. One of them is your writing, and you write all of the scripts, and also some of the issues that you take on, which can be rather heavy for a half-hour TV show, traditionally speaking. And I have to say that I, for one, really don't care at all about sports, and yet I really like the show.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. A knowledge of or an appreciation of sports is, I think, no more required to enjoy Sports Night than a knowledge of or an appreciation of trauma surgery is required to enjoy ER, probably. You don't have to be a sports fan.
How did you hit on this idea for a show?
I had been a fan of SportsCenter on ESPN for a lot of years. In fact, there was about 2 years when I was holed up in a hotel room here in Los Angeles while I was writing the screenplay for The American President, and I didn't get out of the room much. To sort of keep me company while I was I'm from New York, so I didn't know many people out here, and to keep me company, I would have ESPN on in the room almost 24 hours. It'd be and I'd be watching SportsCenter. And these people on SportsCenter really became my friends in a pathetic kind of way. but I did think that the show was remarkably well-produced. And I remember feeling like, boy, I wish I could go behind the scenes there. I bet I could have a great time there. I bet I could make friends. I bet I could meet a girlfriend there. And that's generally, you know, kind of a writer's cue for, you know, gee, it'd be nice to write something about that.
You know, I have to say, watching the show, one of the things that I find really refreshing about it, and I'm talking about your show, Sports Night, is that there seems to me to be a very minimal laugh track.
Yeah.
And yet there are critics who have referred to the laugh track as intrusive. Was there a big fight with ABC over this?
Yeah, the laugh track's been a bit of an issue since the moment we were born. Perhaps a bit too much of an issue. It was written about a lot. I and the other people who do the show felt that the laugh track was just wrong for the show. The style of writing is a little bit different than it is on other half hours. We don't necessarily lead to an obvious punch. A lot of it is more enjoyable than it is laugh out loud funny. So the march time rhythm of a laugh track was actually getting in our way, on top of which we all thought it was a little bit silly and maybe time not to do that anymore. But you got to remember that really the greatest asset of half-hour television, at any rate, is its familiarity. Half-hour television is something that you watch very passively. It's you do it while you're flipping through a magazine or talking on the telephone or cooking dinner or putting the kids to sleep. And in a lot of cases, that sound of the laugh track, the familiarity of the show, that it's a sitcom, that it's a half hour, helps a lot in getting the audience. And I think that our show, because it is a little bit different than other half hours, the concern on the part of the network, and it's a legitimate concern, was that let's try and create some touchstones for this show. Let's try and let people know that there's nothing to be afraid of here. There are more words in this show than in other half hours, but But look, it's funny. It's not good for you. This isn't eating your vegetables. And so that was really the kind of the genesis of the argument. Our laugh track is pretty toned down, and I do like to believe that it's inobtrusive.
Mm-hmm. This show has an ensemble cast, mm-hmm. and many, many of the great TV shows that are most memorable have also had ensemble casts. Sometimes they tend toward archetypes, and I wonder if that's been a temptation that you've had to face when you're writing these characters.
It's always a temptation when you're starting something from scratch, when there's just a blank piece of paper, to say, well, who do you got? You got the neat guy and you got the sloppy guy. You got the tall guy and the short guy. You got the gay guy and the straight guy. Let's say we need a dorky guy and we need a really uptight guy. And you want to do everything that you can to not do that. And one way to not do that is rather than, I think, tell an audience who a character is, if you show them what the character wants, if you're just a little subtler, if you realize that everybody can be smart and everybody can be stupid and everybody can be right and everybody can be wrong, then you'll be a little bit better off. And if you take advantage, I mean, one of the great things that you have in episodic television, I think, is time. If everybody will just agree to be patient, that we're not going to, in the pilot episode, we're not going to feel bound to say these are who these people are in 22 and a half minutes, that we're going to take much more time than that. And if you agree, as I say, that there are no, and I'm going to reference now just a classic comedy and one that I'm a big fan of, but there are no Ted Baxters on the show, then you're probably better off.
How do you go about deciding what to treat as a topic for the program?
That's an interesting question. What I don't do often is say, boy, you know, I feel very strongly about it. What I'll tell you what I don't do is I don't tend to take things off of yesterday's headlines. For one thing, yesterday's headlines will be 6 weeks ago's headlines by the time the show airs. Secondly, it also seems cheap. Oftentimes I'll take something off of page 23. I'll read about something and think, well, you know, that's interesting, and not quite enough was made out of that. And what if this had happened instead of that? That kind of thing. I am not. It's not my goal to necessarily say something with each and every episode. As I said, I'm not looking to teach anybody anything. Really, we're, you know, just we're kind of telling our lame jokes and doing our stories and trying to do them from a place of reality. As opposed to, again, a traditional half-hour place. You know, this isn't the first television show that's been done about a television show. There was a really good one done about a television show, Murphy Brown, which ran for 88 years or something, and it was great. But the success or failure of Murphy Brown, of that show, didn't depend on us thinking, on us believing that that's really how 60 Minutes gets done. A show like that, a national news magazine show, is staffed by five people who have their meetings a little at a linoleum table in the lobby near the elevator. With Sports Night, because we want to tell all kinds of stories and in all kinds of ways, it all has to start from a place of reality or the appearance of reality. You have to really buy that these guys are doing this show every night at 11 o'clock.
Right. Let's talk about some of the risks that this show faces. Let's put it this way. It's had a certain amount of difficulty finding an audience. And mm-hmm. I want to read to you what James Collins wrote in Time magazine about Sports Night. This series represents the best opportunity in a long time for network comedy to evolve into something sharper and more interesting. If it fails, a highly possible outcome given its mediocre ratings, then the networks will be all the more wary of trying something novel. On the other hand, if the show succeeds, it might just revitalize a very tired form.
Well, an easing of the pressure is what we were looking for over at Sports Night, and James Collins provided it. that was a very flattering thing that he wrote about us. The whole piece was very flattering, and the idea that we could do something as huge as change television even a little bit, well, that's pretty high cotton. I can assure you, as flattering as that is, no one, least of all me, went into this with the thought of let's do something different. or let's change the old way that it was done. I'm really writing Sports Night exactly the way I've written everything else, the plays that I've written and the films that I've written. And what's so unusual is simply that it's half-hour television. But that notwithstanding, I like the sound of what James Collins said.
But he also refers to what seems like the sword of Damocles hanging over your head. I mean, are you reading the Nielsen ratings every week, worried that, oh, my God, this might be it for us? We need to find some more viewers.
I will tell you honestly that our ratings, which I must say are now in this is week 13, broadcast week 13, have been climbing and climbing and climbing and are now on the they are respectable, we're going to call them, which means we get about 10 million people every Tuesday night watching the show. I have to tell you that for me, 10 million people is an enormous audience to play to every Tuesday night at 9:30. 10 million people, for instance, is 9 million people more than my play, A Few Good Men, played to in a year and a half on Broadway. The first night that the show was on the air, we premiered September 22nd, if that had been a movie opening that night, it would have been a $90 million opening. So the numbers in television are very strange. And my concern isn't so much that, oh, my God, if we don't get the viewers, we're going to get off the air. My concern is, gee, we've got 10 million people now. I'm not sure I like what we have to do to the show in order to get 12 million people.
Does that mean dumbing it down, making it more conventional TV?
I think that that's going to be the next argument that's going to take place, is really what I'm alluding to. And I'm of a belief that it absolutely does not mean dumbing down the show. I think that people in this country who watch television are a lot smarter than they tend to be given credit for.
Aaron Sorkin is the creator of the TV show Sports Night. He wrote the screenplays for the films Malice, The American President, and A Few Good Men, which means he's responsible for introducing this phrase into the popular culture.
You can't handle the truth!
Aaron Sorkin, what's it like to be the writer of a line like that, which has been taken over by people who are not actors?
Yeah, who knew? Who knew? Every once in a while, you'll see it on The Simpsons or something. And I remember watching the opening of the O.J. Simpson trial, and there were all sorts of pretrial motions flying back and forth. Everyone else in my family is a lawyer. But me. My mother's a school teacher, but my father is an attorney, and my sister is an attorney, and my brother is an attorney. And somewhere in the pretrial motion phase of the O.J. Simpson trial, I think Johnny Cochran referenced the line. Judge Ito, it's like that movie, You Can't Handle the Truth. And then Ito said, yeah, but Nicholson was the bad guy in that movie. And my phone rang, and it was my sister, just saying, 93 years of law school, and you're the one who gets quoted in the trial of the century.
You also wrote The American President, which mm-hmm. has Michael Douglas as a very human but still somewhat heroic chief executive of the United yeah. States. And I read in USA Today when the playwright Wendy Wasserstein came out of a screening, she said, it's a perfect example of what Hollywood wants in a president. It's what they thought they had elected in Clinton. Was she right?
That's interesting. I think that, first of all, I get a little nervous when anybody talks about Hollywood. I have to tell you, as if we all get together for meetings every third Thursday of the month and decide what it is we want and what it is we do. I could not tell you what Hollywood wants and doesn't want in a president. Hollywood had absolutely nothing to do with that movie. I wrote it all by myself. And the answer to Wendy's question is, of course, I wrote the kind of president I wish we had. Certainly one we thought we were getting when we voted for Bill Clinton.
I'm talking with Aaron Sorkin. He's the creator of Sports Night. I wonder what your week is like.
The week begins, it's hard to say when the week begins because the old one is still ending when the new one begins. But the week begins with a Monday morning with a table read of the script that I generally have finished writing on Sunday night. It's been sent out to everyone Sunday night. They've had a chance to read it through. And this table read is for people from the network and from the studio, as well as the department heads and the cast and I. And as soon as the table read is over, Rehearsal begins. We rehearse for 2 days, Monday and Tuesday. Filming begins on Wednesday. We film Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Now, I'm always doing three things. I'm making this week's show while editing last week's show and writing next week's show. Is basically how it works. And I love this show so much. I just love my job. I really sprint to work every morning to get to work with these people. And it's like doing a new one-act play every week. You know, the big difference between what I'm doing now and writing movies is the immediacy of it. Three or four weeks after I've written a show, it'll be on the air. If I were writing a screenplay right now, I could write a joke today and wouldn't hear a laugh for 2 years. So it's really an adrenaline rush.
When it comes to the dialogue, you talk about the jargon and the illusion of reality, but even just in the writing of dialogue, it's so far from the way people really speak, and yet it does have that illusion. It feels more real than if you were, in fact, transcribing actual dialogue from people in real life.
That's right.
And it's very writerly dialogue.
Yeah, it's I'm going to accept that as a compliment. It's what it is. It's the way I write. It's not so much the way people speak, I think, as maybe the way people wish they spoke sometime. If I'm going to have a 2 minute conversation with my best friend, let me try scripting it, and it can be more interesting. There's a certain musicality to it. It's very. I mean, a lot of the show is very much about its own rhetoric. We try and strike the right balance in 22 minutes and 35 seconds. We have a lot more words per episode, I think, than some other shows do. It's the way I write.
It's a funny balance. Anytime you're trying to make a work of art, how much artifice do you use to create the sense of reality?
Yeah. Well, I become that's right. And I've enjoyed playing with that balance in the other things that I've written, which required that same. I mean, part of the fun of The American President was going to be the feeling of, boy, I feel like I'm inside the White House. And there's a cool conversation taking place that I don't get to see on CNN or hear about on NPR. And same thing with being in a Navy courtroom and in Malice. In Malice, I am also my friends know this about me. I will frequently, as far as the jargon is concerned, make things up, especially in a first draft. If I'm writing a first draft and I'm really just trying to get the sense of the scene down on paper and the sort of the verbal fireworks, really the rhythm and the music of it, I'm really not going to bother to. I wrote a scene that was cut from the film Malice, but it had been an opening scene in an operating room where the camera was just circling the doctors and the nurses standing around the operating table while instruments were being asked for and slapped into the surgeon's hand, and a lot of chrome and steel and this and that and suction and numbers going back and forth, and it was and this scene built and built and built, and it was terrific. But I was making up all this stuff in the scene, and finally, as the script went along, it was in production and brought in a technical supervisor, a trauma surgeon, and I was amazed to find out that one of the things I had done and this was right.
It's pretty scary when you think.
Yeah,
about
it was very scary. Yes, the Benson clamp.
Aaron Sorkin is the creator, executive producer, and head writer of Sports Night.